From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Lots of politics and policy to discuss today. In a bit, we'll debate the merits of a wealth tax, a favored policy proposal from both Senators Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. But first, to politics and yesterday's major moment in the House impeachment inquiry. William Taylor, U.S. Chargé d'Affaires to Ukraine, laid out his opening statement regarding President Trump and Ukraine, 15 pages of detailed, careful testimony that asserted there was a quid pro quo between the White House and Ukraine regarding investigating the Bidens, including Taylor's testimony that President Trump wanted Ukrainian President Zelensky, quote, in a public box by making a public statement about launching such an investigation. So let's dive into this. And joining us from Washington, we have Mike Lillis, senior reporter for The Hill. He'll talk about the latest from Congress. So, Mark, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
Well, so first of all, tell us a little bit more about, and I'm sorry for saying your name incorrectly there for a second, Mark, but tell us a little bit more about what Taylor has offered in his testimony. How much more detail is he giving us from what we've known over the past couple of weeks?
Well, you know, based on the opening statement, which leaked very early in this process, it was just a few minutes after he went into the door, and so there, it was very clear that he wanted this out there. And it's quite damning testimony that, as you said, that Trump wanted a foreign country to open investigations into his political rivals, and he leveraged two things to try to get that done. And, you know, in short, Donald Trump and his allies have said that there is no quid pro quo. They've said it over and over again over the course of this month-long investigation. Bill Taylor said very clearly that no, yes, there was, and here's the evidence that lays out how this happened. And as you said, again, he took very meticulous notes. He has delivered those to the State Department, and there is no doubt that Congress and Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff are going to want to get their hands on those documents as well. That'll offer a lot more detail than just the 15-page opening statement, which is all we've seen to this point. But this puts Trump in a box, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, he said that Zelensky would be in a public box. Trump is now in a box. It's his word against this career diplomat, and he's taken all of these notes. And if he delivers them to Congress, then buckle up. We've got a fight on our hands.
Yeah. So, and I just want to let folks know if they have any questions about this latest chapter in the impeachment inquiry, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Now, Mike, let's dig into this a little bit more because, for example, Taylor goes into quite a bit of detail regarding what he calls an irregular policy channel effectively run by Rudy Giuliani and Ambassador Sondland. I mean, we haven't seen this level of detail about the activities of Giuliani and Sondland before, have we?
No, we've heard whispers about it. We have heard testimony suggesting as much. You know, when Marie Yovanovitch was here just last week, she was the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. She was removed in May over concerns that Giuliani was running sort of a shadow State Department and was trying to pressure foreign leaders, to jump into these investigations that would have helped Trump's campaign. So very politically motivated, it would seem. And her testimony was also fairly damning, but it wasn't delivered in this much detail, at least that we've seen. The transcripts, we think, will come out later, but we haven't seen the transcripts, and so we don't know exactly what was said. So to say that we haven't, that no one has delivered this type of detail, we don't know the answer, but certainly it hasn't been made public, mm-hmm. and that is why everybody's sort of in an uproar this week. And if you listen to the Democrats coming out of Bill Taylor's deposition yesterday, they seem to say that this is the smoking gun without using those words. You know, they said this is the most damning testimony that we've heard so far. Someone described it as a sea change in the process. And Stephen Lynch from Massachusetts suggested that this could actually accelerate the process because the Democrats now have exactly what they need.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of that reaction that you're talking about, Mike. Here's freshman Congressman Andy Levin, a Democrat from Michigan. Here's what he said.
All I have to say is that in my 10 short months in Congress, it's not even noon, right? And this is my most disturbing day in Congress so far.
Now, Mike Lillis, in the language of a career diplomat, usually they're very careful, right, not to assert, not to inject politics into statements like this. But I was quite taken when Taylor writes that he felt that this sort of informal channel, this informal policymaking channel, was actually acting in opposition to longstanding U.S. policy. I mean, my sense is that for a diplomat, those are pretty strong words.
Extremely strong words. And what you're seeing, you know, yes, the career diplomats are usually very careful. They don't like to get involved in the politics, and that's to their advantage, obviously. These guys serve under, you know, various administrations of both parties, and they want to be seen as neutral arbiters of U.S. foreign policy and not let the politics encroach on any of that. You know, that's an important element of the State Department, and it's why they seek to remain sort of autonomous. But what you saw, even going back to the Marie Yovanovitch testimony, she was very curt about, you know, the detrimental effects that this whole episode is having on the State Department. It's it's an erosion of morale. People think that Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, is leaning too far towards Trump and not, you know, defending the career diplomats enough. And that's why these guys are coming up to, you know, they're defying the blockade that Trump is trying to put on these witnesses, on the documents, and they're testifying under subpoena, but they're sort of friendly subpoenas, right? The State Department says you can't testify. The Democrats issue a subpoena, and they come in, and they're singing like birds. And you got to think that they are trying to protect the institution because, you know, Bill Taylor doesn't seem to have any kind of legal involvement in this. You know, he's not under scrutiny for any of this. He has threatened to quit over it. So it's not like he's trying to save himself in this case. He's trying to save the institution that he's spent his life working for.
Okay. Now, a little bit more about that public box part, because, again, it's the level of detail here, which is just so eye-opening, that Taylor says that Ambassador Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, said that, told him that everything was dependent on everything, you know, in a meeting with the president, the $400 million in assistance, that it was all dependent on the Ukrainian president making this announcement, making an announcement about investigating that company, Burisma, and the Bidens, and that President Trump wanted Zelensky in a public box by making a public statement about ordering such investigations. And later on, we even read that they had discussed Zelensky going on CNN in order to do this.
That's right. Yeah, you know, and that part was not a surprise because if you looked at the text messages that were released a couple weeks ago, that was Kurt Volker. Mm-hmm. He was the former U.S. envoy to the Ukraine, and he came up, testified. He gave Congress a series of text messages between himself, Gordon Sondland, and Bill Taylor, and they revealed very clearly that Volker and Sondland were both pressing Zelensky to make that public statement, and they were sort of dangling a meeting with Donald Trump to get what they wanted. So for Bill Taylor to come up to Capitol Hill and kind of amplify that message was not a surprise. He provided some more details, but the episode didn't change. That part's not a surprise. And Sondland, of course, came up and testified just last week. He said that he had regretted making some of those offers. He didn't deny them, but he did say there was no quid pro quo directly with the U.S. military aid. And so there was a discrepancy there between Bill Taylor and Gordon Sondland. And one of the things that most striking out of yesterday was that a lot of Democrats seemed to think that Sondland was not, you know, he was less than open, less than sincere in his testimony. And some of them want Gordon Sondland to come back and testify again and to iron out some of the discrepancies with Taylor's testimony. So we'll have to see, you know, does this prolong the process now if previous witnesses have to come back? Does it accelerate the process, as Stephen Lynch said, because they have the smoking gun? These are all kind of balls in the air and questions that we have looking forward.
All right. Well, let's hear briefly from a tape from a couple of Republicans about how they're reacting to the release of Taylor's testimony or his opening statement yesterday. Here's Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz, a Republican, insisting that the Democratic reaction to Taylor's testimony is overblown.
The president has been very clear that there is not this linkage of aid to any future election activity. And the most important factual development, actually, I understand, came from questions from Congressman Ratcliffe. He asked, well, is there any Ukrainian who we can point to at any moment in time who knew that this aid was even on a hold?
First of all, Mike, Can we point to a Ukrainian who knew that this aid was on hold? It seems like Taylor's opening statement says we can.
Yes, Taylor's opening statement says that we can. Now, he's not naming names just yet, but I'm sure those were the questions that were asked after the opening statement was made, and so we'll have to await the transcripts. But, you know, the Democrats counter, again, the smoking gun with Taylor goes back all the way to the, you know, to the whistleblower, to the transcript that the White House itself released between Donald Trump and President Zelensky, Yovanovitch's testimony, and Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, who was on TV last Thursday and seemed to suggest, yes, there was a quid pro quo. So, you know, as the accumulation continues, as the statements come out, they seem to be pointing in that direction. And the Democrats at this point are just kind of say, you know, they're taking it for granted that this has happened. And now the question is, how do we react? They're beyond the question of whether this did, in fact, happen. And the Republicans, it's important, I think, to notice, are really focusing on the process here more than the substance. Matt Gaetz's comments aside. That's the first time we've heard a lot of the substance of this.
Mike, let me just jump in here because I want to play tape from how another very powerful Republican on the Hill reacted. Here is Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell speaking with CBS's Nancy Cordes yesterday.
The president has said that you told him that his phone call with the Ukrainian president was perfect and innocent. Do you believe that the president has handled this Ukrainian situation perfectly?
We've not had any conversations on that subject.
So he was lying about that?
You'll have to ask him. I don't recall any conversations with the president about that phone call.
Mike Lillis, we've just got about 30 seconds here. So when you hear Mitch McConnell trying to take a half step back there, while also supporting the president, what does that mean?
It means that he's being very consistent. You know, he has been critical of the president on certain issues. You've seen it on the most recent Syria troop pullout, but he has been very careful not to go after the president on anything. He is up for re-election in 2020, and the base is still much behind Donald Trump, and Mitch McConnell is going to need him both to get legislative things done and to get reelected.
Well, Mike Lillis is a senior reporter for The Hill, speaking to us from Washington. Mike, thank you so much.
Thank you, Megan. I'm happy to be with you.
Well, when we come back, we'll debate the merits of a wealth tax. This is On Point.